architecture then and now with Karin.
The great, mysterious power of knowledge that has disturbed mankind minds since ancient times. The currency, the gift and the curse. In spite of intolerance, persecution and centuries of harassment, the seeds of knowledge sown in the minds of humanity survived and continue to grow. Inquisitiveness, curiosity, striving for truth, that is what always driven the humans. The universe, whose power is still incomprehensible, has given us a great strength, the desire for knowledge, as opposed to the darkness of ignorance. Knowledge is a synonym for a light. The light that illuminates our paths through centuries. The universities, the cradle, the grave, and the way. Originally, the term university was used to describe a specific type of urban guild. This term is derived from the Latin word universitas, that meant collective, community, and even the universe. Later, it was adopted according to the new realities. In its contemporary meaning, as an institution of higher education, the oldest one was the University of Bologna. It was founded in 1088. However, formerly the University of Bologna was a student association. The other one was an unified corporation of students and masters which established the base of the Paris University. By the end of the 13th century, universities had already become the largest midpoints of science and culture in Europe. The greatest scientific and theological ideas were born and disseminated there. Universities have become a kind of benchmark for training the secular and ecclesiastical elite. By 1300, there had been established 18 universities, enrolling thousands of students. Besides the University of Bologna and Paris, the oldest currently existing in Europe are Oxford. The exact day of its founding is unknown, but education was already underway in 1096, Cambridge 1209, and the University of Salamanca 1218. The oldest university in Central Europe, Charles University in Prague, was founded by Emperor Charles IV in 1348. But let's start from the very beginning. Roman's doctrine of faith, despite its Greek origin, reflects a purely Roman perception of social reality. The Romans believed that every person had a duty to develop their talents and will. Yet, none of this could change what was written in destiny. Their greatest leaders often took huge, reckless risks. These actions seemed irrational and had no clear way out. When they triumphed, the people saw it as a proof that they were protected by an internal and mysterious power. Without faith's support, all human effort was hollow and meaningless. In Rome, special attention was paid to education. Primary education, such as basic numeracy and literacy, was available in any Roman town and generally free of charge. Consequently, the literacy rate, especially amongst city dwellers, was unusually high. Literacy was virtually universal. A full-fledged education, let's call it secondary, in the West could be obtained at several episcopal sees and several major monasteries. However, a complete education, let's say up to university level, was possible only in the East. For example, the most famous schools were located in the metropolises of Athens, Alexandria, Damascus, Antioch, and from the 5th century in Constantinople. The world-famous Library of Alexandria was accessible to anyone. Everybody who could read was allowed there, not just scholars. There was also an academy there, where students studied. It was the finest institution of higher learning even in Roman times. Finally, it was a center of scholarship primarily in astronomy and humanities. Translations and copies of the books were done there. A higher school in Rome was opened by the Emperor Hadrian in 135 AD. It was called the Athenaeum. A passionate admirer of the cultural heritage of ancient Greece, Emperor Hadrian gave the name Athenaeum to the largest university in the empire. In this way, he wanted to transfer the glory of education from Athens to Rome. In Athens itself, since the time of Plato, there was an academy, which became the focus of philosophical education during the reign of Emperor Marcus Aurelius, specifically in the 2nd century AD. The word academy didn't mean in those times a specialized institution of higher education as it does today. Although the academy was an educational institution with a specialization. Another major educational center in the Roman Empire was the Constantinople University, opened by Emperor Theodosius II in 425 AD and officially named the Auditorium. It was intended to train officials and the elite. Instruction was conducted in Latin and Greek. So the higher education was the third stage of the ancient educational process, following the elementary and secondary links of training. In Greece, the philosophical direction of higher education prevailed, and in Rome, it was rhetorical direction. Its practical application in Greece was medicine, and in Rome it was jurisprudence. To a certain extent, this served as professional training. From the 2nd century AD, along with private higher education, public higher education gradually developed. In these cities, a unique student life arose with strict rules and customs, which have partially survived to this day. Stadium Particulare was a medieval school for local students. It stood between elementary church schools and international universities called Stadium Generale. These were large educational and research centers. They were founded by bishops and other powerful figures. The Salerna Medical School of 9th century is one example. It is often called the first institution of higher education in Europe, although it never achieved university status. It had its own clinic, by the way. But once a school achieved the status of Stadium Generale, it acquired the right to award academic degrees and many other privileges, reserved only for higher levels of study. It is worth noting that Constantinople University opened in the 5th century and the oldest universities in Western Europe opened in 13th century. The University of Cordoba opened in the 8th century. The professors in Cordoba were Muslims or Jews. The Muslim professors were incredibly fascinated by Aristotle. They actively translated him into Arabic, wrote extensive commentaries on him, and analyzed his works relentlessly. from the 13th century onward, a different, more familiar term came into use – universitas. This term emphasized the global status of the educational center, or as we would say today, its international character. University degrees was recognized throughout Europe. Holders could teach anywhere in the Christian world. This was called ius ubique docendi, the right to teach everywhere. Follow us on Radio Ara, the radio for all voices, 102.9, 105.2 and 87.8 FM. Nalanda University was an extraordinary center of learning for 7 centuries.
Wow!
At its peak, Nalanda played host for more than 10,000 students. Its education provided in its heyday by 2,000 well-renowned professors. And it was completely free. Nalanda University was located in ancient India, in what is now Bihar. It was one of the greatest centers of learning in the ancient world. Its cultural influence spread far beyond India. Scholars came from China, Tibet, Korea, and Persia. The university complex covered a vast area. It followed a precise layout. The complex included temples, 11 monasteries, multi-story buildings, and an observatory. Numerous monasteries, viharas, served as both classrooms and dharmitaris. Each was a square building with premises around an inner courtyard. Each courtyard had a well or veranda. Admission was extremely difficult. Applicants faced a rigorous oral examination at the gate, conducted by a gatekeeper. Only 2 or 3 out of 10 passed. This guaranteed a student body of the highest caliber. Archaeologists found stone beds, study tables, and inkwells inside the residences. In the basements, they discovered ancient kitchen with burnt rice remains, somewhere over 1,000 years old. So I would say they really expired. The most impressive structure was the 9-story library, which housed approximately 9 million manuscripts. Unfortunately, the library was burned in the 12th century by Bakhtiyar Khidji. The fire was so intense that the scrolls and books are said to have burned for several months. The scholar monks were killed, and after that, Buddhism in the region fell into decline and the university fell into oblivion for many centuries. The University of Bologna was founded in 1088. It is the oldest university in Europe still operating today. Unlike most European universities, Bologna began as a students' corporation. Students selected the administration and controlled the hiring process. They also selected the professors themselves. Students and faculty came from all over Europe. In 1154, the patron of the Center of Learning, Emperor Frederick Barbarossa, granted the school official university status. Bologna professors were famous for law and liberal arts. Dukes and princes came to study under them. Women also studied there. This was very rare in the Middle Ages. Even more surprising, the university had female professors. Today, Bologna is still highly regarded. It ranks among the top 100 universities in Europe and the top 200 worldwide. Over 84,000 of students attend. Famous alumni include Copernicus, Paracelsus, Dante, Petrarch, Echo. The main symbol of the University of Bologna is the Palazzo dell'Archiginnasio. It was built in just a year and a half according to the design of the architect Antonio Morandi. The building became famous for its unique interior. Its walls are the largest heraldic complex in the world. Over 2.5 centuries they were decorated with about 6,000 coats of arms and heraldic symbols of students and professors from all over Europe. The university didn't always have its own buildings, but its influence on the architecture of the city is enormous. Bologna became famous primarily as a center for the study of Roman law. In addition of jurisprudence, the medicine, philosophy, mathematics, astronomy were also taught here. Architecture then and now with Karim. Oxford. Founded in 1096, Oxford is a true treasure trove of English architecture, with a variety of styles represented. The most striking is the style of late Gothic. The oldest surviving building is the Divinity School, built between 1427 and 1483. Oxford is not a single building, but a city that is a museum in itself. Its architecture is a fusion of Gothic, Renaissance, and Classicism, formed over centuries. In the heart of Oxford's structure is the college, community of students and teachers. By tradition, the architecture of the college includes a dining hall, a chapel, a library, and several courtyards. One of the largest colleges is Christ Church. Its great hall served as the architectural inspiration for the famous Hogwarts dining room in the Harry Potter films. The college chapel is also the smallest cathedral in England. The Bodleian Library was founded in 1602, and this is one of the oldest libraries in Europe. Its labyrinthine reading rooms and dungeons were appeared in the film adaptations of Harry Potter. This library houses millions of books, including priceless medieval manuscripts. Another impressive building is the Radcliffe Camera. I would say it is Oxford's most recognizable building. This is a round, rotund building in the English Palladian style. It topped by a large dome, the only one of its kind among the Oxford spires. The chapel of Merton College is a fine example of early English Gothic architecture. Built at the end of the 13th century, it is distinguished by austere elegance and impressive dimensions, unusual for a college chapel. The existing structure is the chancel of what was intended to be a much larger monastic-style church, which explains its unusual scale for a university chapel. Wow! The Sorbonne was founded in 1257 by Robert de Sorbonne, confessor to King Louis IX. Its name became synonymous with the entire University of Paris, which united local theological schools from 1215. Thomas Aquinas, Roger Bacon, and William of Ockham all studied and taught there. After the University of Paris split in 20th century, the Sorbonne became independent. In the 17th century, Cardinal de Richelieu commissioned Jacques Le Mercier to modernize the buildings. Le Mercier's Sorbonne Chapel was one of the Paris's first stone-domed buildings, inspired, of course, by Italian architecture. It had two elevations, one facing the city and the other one facing the courtyard. Architectural feature indicating its role as both a church and a public space. In the late 19th century, architect Henri-Paul Ninot created a new Sorbonne in an eclectic style. He blended neo-Renaissance elevations, antique peristyles, and the classical courtyard dominated by the chapel. The grand vestibule, staircase, and amphitheater are now French historic monuments. This project united the arts and science faculties for the first time. In 2025, it was selected for the World Monuments Fund Watch and attracted over 15,000 visitors in a single heritage weekend. Follow us on Radio Ara, the radio for all voices, 102.9, 105.2 and 87.8 FM. The modern University of Luxembourg, founded in 2003, may not boast a long history, but its architecture is a vibrant and distinctive phenomenon. Its main campus, Belleval, is a shining example of how to integrate the 21st century into a harsh industrial history. Built on the side of a former steel mill, the main campus is a tribute to its industrial past while also offering a bold look to the future. The central building, La Maison de Savoir, is the architectural heart of the campus, designed by Baumschlager Eberle in collaboration with Christian Bauer Associate. It was opened in 2015. Its 85-meter-tall tower intentionally echoes the proportions of old blast furnace. Its architectural creates a sense of continuity across eras. It is an impressive experiment that symbolically unifies pure theoretical knowledge with practical aspects of the material world. The upper floors appear to float in the air thanks to the enormous cantilevered structure of prestressed concrete that protrude from the supports. The building is wrapped in a double facade, an outer layer of steel lattice and an inner climatic layer. This lattice, forming a moire pattern, serves as sun protection and makes the Maison de Savoir the first high-rise building in Europe to use only natural ventilation. Inside the building is organized like a small city, a network of passages, bridges, and interior spaces connects classrooms and offices. There is even a small roof garden on the fourth floor. Next to the monumental House of Knowledge is the more intimate Faculty of Science campus, designed by Parisian architecture firm Inessa Anch. Here, architecture acts as a link between the human scale and the gigantic industrial ruins. The campus architecture presents a variety of public spaces to encourage interaction and the exchange of ideas among students. The decks and walkways create the impression of a journey through different levels and other panoramic views of the surrounding area. The great air of knowledge goes on. Thanks to its power, civilization developed and our world changed. But the most important thing today is to follow the humanistic ideals of true explorers of all times. Compassion, empathy, mutual assistance, support, and unification of thinking people under the auspices of knowledge are the core principles of university communities around the world.
perhaps the most important lesson we have to learn is kindness and tolerance in our united and yet so disjunct world.
I'm a real wild one. Wild one. Wild one. Wild one. Wild one.